Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by Madeline Horwath, comedic performer and visual artist.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I have allergies. I'm tired. Mm-hmm. I just dyed my hair. And it's all over my neck. I'm pretty sure I have gout.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So I'm doing well.
Yeah.
It's a positive attitude.
It's what you make of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I, as listeners of the show know, I do this thing where I just add a bunch of people on Facebook. And I think I did that at some point and then got introduced to your work through that.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was wondering, like, who the fuck is this?
This is a very frequent thing that happens to me. And I always feel, for me at this point, like, I just really want to meet as many people that are doing dope work as possible. Like, that's just kind of where I'm at. And so I'm always fortunate that people are, like, gracious enough to put up with that, but then mm-hmm. it's always like, oh cool, please now, like, come on the podcast, I want to, like, feature your stuff, like, especially because, like, what's been really cool is that you use the platform in a very similar way, like, professionally, where you, like, kind of show your process and things like that as an artist, so I was like, please come on the show, like, we want to talk about your work, so thank you for that.
Thank you for having me. This strokes my ego so bad. Oh. No, it was really nice. I was pleasantly surprised. I was not expecting that at all because all those little comics I draw are literally just from a notepad from work, and I'll do it at my desk, post it, like, you know, heighten contrast, brighten a bit, and mm-hmm. then just, like, go back to doing, like, accounts payable work
mm-hmm.
or office management.
But what I also love is that, like, through your work, it's also very much has a consistent aesthetic. You know, like, you've kind of, like, have an, like, well, let me actually ask a question. Like, so when you think about your art, like, do you have a kind of, like, are there through lines between, like, how your artistic identity comes out, or does each piece feel very different for you?
I sometimes think I don't have a consistent look because, especially when I do commissions, which I separate from the comics and things that are passion projects, mm-hmm. for me, commissions are business. Like, I just want to make money. Mm-hmm. And if I can do that from art and then work part-time in the office, I will do that. I just, yeah. So for that, it's usually just what the client is asking for. I recently had a commission where someone wanted a work in the style of an old Persian manuscript and had to put in some Persian calligraphy in it, and which I don't know. And so I used a translator, and I was just putting random shit in one of the things said freecreditreport.com.
Mm-hmm.
And the client, she keeps asking, what does it say? What does it say? I'm like, something about stars? I don't remember. I hope she never finds out. That's actually my biggest fear right now. But with that, it's really just what people want.
I hope she doesn't listen to the podcast.
Fuck.
I mean, there's got to be ways to figure it out.
I'm going to block her for when I post this. Cause she paid like $50 for this, and it's like, I don't want to give that money back.
Well, so,
but I also doubt that she did that in a way thinking that, like, oh, I really need you to be a Persian calligraphy expert.
No, she can actually be kind of a bitch. I love her, so I can say that.
Yeah.
This friend, she is a straight up self-described cunt, and I love her.
Mm-hmm.
So I am going to block her from when I post this. I am not joking.
Well, so, I'm honored to be a part of this story.
I actually have a question. So, based on this story, why didn't you just look up, like, stars? Like, why did you put in Free Credit Report?
Because she just kept wanting, like, to add more writing in and stuff that looks nice. And I didn't want to make it sort of like the Persian version of, like, Chinese tattoo. Yeah,
where it's like virtue, justice.
Blah. But it actually says like bean spreads give you gout. Is that the second time I've said gout today? Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's a good word.
I just like those old timey diseases that just seem to only
like
kill
them in that you get them.
Yeah. And then they get rich. Rich people get gout. And I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. But then when it comes to the comics I'm doing, actually what you are seeing, because it's very crude style, is me testing out the jokes on my social media. And then what you're not seeing right now is the final product that's more detailed, and I do it on my computer and stuff because... So I'm flying to New York in 3 weeks to submit comics to the New Yorker. Mm-hmm. And so I've been testing those jokes out on people because I have no idea what lands. I just don't. There was one that I made, I'm like, whatever. And it a lot of people liked it. And then there was one I'm like, this is going to land. This is so good. And it got maybe like 7 likes. So that's what I'm doing it for. I'm flying to New York, submitting comics to the New Yorker, and using you all as my test subjects.
Nice.
That's cool. So how long have you been doing that?
Those comics?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to sound bad, but like 4 or 5 months.
Why would that sound bad?
I don't know.
I think it's a decent amount of time.
Yeah, okay. 4 or 5 months, which is a great amount of time.
But also, great. I couldn't do that, is what I'm saying. Like, there's, how long have you been drawing for? Like, how long have you been creating art for?
Oh, I've been doing art my whole life. My parents put me in, like, my first art classes when I was 5. And then always taking art classes, and then I was sort of told to like do the after school art programs, art camp, go, you know, take the art electives in high school, AP art, major in art, do work at this old art like annex in Virginia called the Torpedo Factory. So my parents just have been like raising me to like do art my whole life. So it's hard to think of a time when I wasn't doing it.
Well, and I find that really interesting in that sense, because the idea of then coming to comics as a format, like, was it a surprise that when you first started doing the comic format, or did you, had it kind of been something that you'd been considering for a while and then didn't know how to start, or...
Yeah, so when I was an art major in college, I didn't know, like, what to do, and I honestly did not care because I hated my college experience so much that I just wanted to get it over with, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
I survived, and I just thought, I'll just make comics, but it was, like, multi-panel comics, and it was more about the rhetoric of comics and the art style. Mm-hmm. But when I was, like, 13 or so... Or maybe 15, when like YouTube first came on, the New Yorker had animated versions of some of their best cartoons. And I thought they were just so funny. There was one that just killed me. It was like the snake with a giant almost camel hump on its tail. And he just says, "Everything I eat goes straight to my ass." I'm like, it would make sense. He would say that. Like, these things made sense to me. And I became very into the formula of them. And, like, yeah, like, the New Yorker is kind of a yuppie rag. I'm going to block them from this post, too.
I'm gonna put your mind at ease right here. The New Yorker doesn't listen to this podcast.
Well, if you they never do, know. I gotta, can I,
don't
can
say
I,
that.
Can I admit something?
What?
I like the New Yorker better than most things. Like, there are a lot of things I don't like, but, like, for whatever reason, as far as, like, institutions go, like, there are a lot of institutions that I could, the New Yorker's pretty okay.
I prefer tremendously over, like, fucking SNL.
Yeah, I agree.
If SNL disappeared for 10 seconds, I'd be like, that sucks. But then I'd be like, oh my God, we're still here.
Right.
We're still alive. We're going to be okay. Because I'm going to be honest, I fucking hate that show so much.
I always have, like, because I will watch it sometimes, but I always kind of have, like, a love-hate relationship with it where I'm just like, this, none of the takes are ever nuanced.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, I can't handle the fact that they keep doing Jussie Smollett bits. That's really annoying to me. Especially because, like...
Not everything has to be a fucking bit.
Yeah.
Well, and what's especially rough about their Jussie Smollett bits is that the actor who plays it is a Chicago comedian.
Oh, Chris?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He caused a fight between me and an ex.
We should block Chris from this, too. Just kidding.
No.
I actually just am going to block a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened is, so my ex is friends with Luke Knoll, who lasted one season.
Mm-hmm.
And he had that infamous, like, run. And when my ex went to visit, he met Chris Pratt, who's also, you know, a Chicago I.O. guy.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, Chris Redd, you mean?
Chris Redd, sorry. What did I say?
Chris Pratt.
Oh,
I was like, damn.
Oh.
I did not know that. Didn't he live in, like, Australia, Chris Pratt, or something like that?
No, if he's from Seattle. He was, like, homeless in Seattle.
All right. Oh,
he started that. Wow. Now it's taken off.
Yeah.
he made it
cool.
Sorry, I have allergies.
It's okay.
You're right, I shouldn't apologize. My ex and I, we had hooked up after a breakup, and...
Your theory about cats only wanting warmth is very true, because I left the PC on.
Yeah, cat just jumped off my lap. But Chris was, like, pointing to us in the eyes, and we were like, so what's the deal with you two? And I just said, we're exes, and he's like, you friends or y'all just fucking? And my face just went red, and it was heating up. Then I walked up to him later, and he was like, gave me a hug, and he was like, I'm sorry about it. I'm like, no, it was hilarious. And then my ex was just like, it just got in this fight, and I was drunk, and I was just like, I'll talk to you when I'm ready to talk to you. Got on my bike, fell over immediately right in front of him.
Oh, God.
Was that at Camp, a comedy show?
Yo! Yes!
We were at that show.
I know. Did, like,
oh, God. So
we didn't see that. We didn't
okay,
see
we were like in the front. Oh, God. Yeah, I got
I didn't see the falling over part, but I do remember that happening. And I remember thinking, like, what the fuck, Chris Redd? Like, what is that? Like,
oh, wait. You saw that happen?
I remember the. You remember the that Chris Redd did that? That he said.
That was me.
Oh, he did that in the show. I don't believe that.
Yeah, you don't remember that? It was like his crowd work before he started.
He was just.
He also ran long. Do you remember also, that? He, like. They, yeah. Because I remember, because we know, not we didn't talk to them about this. Like, I'm not, like, ratting that they had some kind of take on this or not. But we, anyway.
Can we release this episode?
Yeah. Honestly, I'm going to make it harder to release. That set sucked. Go Joseph Goebbels. Release this shit now.
No, I'm sure that Chris Redd is, like, a fine person. But that was not his best showing.
No, that set sucked ass. He was drunk and high as shit. Like, I just kept watching him struggle to get the straw in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't care. Like, we know he's funny. He's, like, a star. He's an Emmy-winning star on SNL. And he was, like, an amazing improviser on 3P, which is my favorite improv team. So, I
don't
think
believe
he can deal with
you. That's so fucking
one.
Funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that was, yeah, that was me.
That was the first show we had been to.
Oh, it's such a great show.
Oh, it's fantastic.
No, Samantha... it wasn't the first. It was like probably the third.
Nope, that was
the
first.
Sure?
Positive.
Yeah, it was.
They do a great job.
Oh, I love Samantha and Tess. They're so sweet.
Yeah.
That place is great.
Yeah.
We brought my mom there for her birthday.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was really nice.
That's nice, yeah. If I was going to bring my mom or dad to a comedy show, I think it would be that one. Because I am not bringing them to, like, an open mic at North Bar.
No. God, no.
I love my mom.
Mm-hmm.
No, me too. I was like, Mom, I just want you to have fun.
Yeah.
Let's go to the place where it's not going to be judgmental.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it has good food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to come back to your art. If
oh
that's
yeah.
Cool. I know. This is gold though. Like I definitely had a hard time deciding, like, okay, if we're gonna steer this conversation, which way should we go? Because I'm having a lot of fun.
I just woke up, so
you're nice. Totally fine.
Fair.
So, well, we could, like, now that we're kind of talking about Chicago comedy, we could go comedy.
Well, I also think it's really interesting the idea of, like, the feeling of pitching the New Yorker, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's just something, going back, it's something I'm going to do, and there was, like, a structure, and there was a way to it, and I was fortunate enough, I'm going to brag about myself here, because I know I'm being interviewed, not you, listener. I somehow ended up chatting with this guy, Nicholas Gerwich, who makes the Perry Bible Fellowship. And it's my favorite online comic, and it's been around forever. He's won an Eisner Award, which is like a comic award. It's like a big deal. He's good. And he was telling me that he was in, oh my God, I'm forgetting, Emma Allen, who's the cartoonist editor. He was in her office trying to act out an idea he had, because he does multi-panel strips, and it's, you're supposed to just have one line, and it's just sort of applying your voice to one line while also balancing out perfectly. I mean, it's like a comic. Mm-hmm. The visuals with the words, but like tighter. And so I'm just like always been a very visual person, obviously. And then I've been doing this comedy, and basically what comedy's teaching you is just to make observations of something, and what can any saying apply in a different situation. And because I've always been like kind of a fucking loser with no friends, introvert, I've always just sort of had to be on the outside of conversations amongst people, observing them, so I can figure out how to have conversations, how to get by socially. So I end up just being, now I'm just like so observant of things that people say, from this conditioning myself to have any sort of social adeptness. And I think that's where I get it. Mm-hmm. And everything's just like, whatever I put in those comics is just like what's on the top of my mind at that moment. Mm-hmm. And some are winners and some are duds, and that's totally fine. Mm.
So what is the process of pitching to the New Yorker?
So normally what most people do is you can do it online through Submittable, which is just an online submitting thing. And they get about 1,000 submissions a week for comics. And it could be good, but you're going to get rejected. So my first time submitting some of them were good. Some I like knew. Now looking back, I'm like, but it got rejected. And I was lucky to have a friend, Dan Abramowitz, who messaged me, and he's like, he just got something in, like, Shouts and Murmurs for the New Yorker. Mm-hmm. He's very funny, very talented. He messaged me, and he was like, don't let this get you down. Sometimes they don't see it, and it's like a rolling process, and rejection's mm-hmm. not the end of it. And so I took that to heart, and knowing that my stuff wasn't terrible. And I ended up just doing like a ton and ton of research on how to get it noticed in a way that wasn't that online format, which is like impossible to get noticed. And I don't know if it's like, it still holds up, but this interview was from maybe 2017, where Emma says she accepts walk-ins on Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And then I'm reading up on other people who go and submit their stuff. And I'm like, might as well take my chance. So I bought like the cheapest Spirit Airways ticket. Like I'll be leaving at Monday at night and then coming back like Wednesday early in the morning. Mm-hmm. Just with like the clothes on my back and my portfolio, because if you take Spirit Airways, it's a $50 charge for a suitcase. I'm like, right. I'm not fucking doing that.
Yeah, I'm from Long Island, New York.
Okay.
And so I've done that flight a couple times, and now we've just decided to always drive pretty much, because like,
it's like an 8-hour drive
to New York.
It's like 14 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, it's 8 hours.
It's still.
It's not bad.
No, it's not terrible. It's
a day. It's fine.
But you couldn't do just a day, I don't think. But like,
oh yeah, no.
If I were doing just a day, spirits totally
with Adderall, it. Anything's possible.
That is true. That is
come
very
with
true.
Me and we'll see.
Yeah, I have this weird vial of like flight, like pilot. What is it Scrum? Called? Yes. No.
You said you could say anything you
it's
want.
They're pills that we like can't release. They're pills that fighter pilots take to stay awake for like 36
have you ever
hours.
Have you ever heard of that book Blitzed?
No.
It's basically about how the Nazis did that.
God, really?
And just like, I mean, all of their pilots and their fighters, SS guys, everything, were just always on these uppers, and so was Adolf Hitler. That's why, like...
Oh, yeah, no, that man was fucking...
Yeah,
like,
we
I
all...
Mean, obviously, he was a terrible person, but he also, like... Yeah, sorry, what are you gonna say?
He was terrible, but he just had terrible... Like, people think, like, oh, he's like a... He was a great speaker, but it's like, we don't speak German. Truthfully... He just was a terrible public speaker. He had that, like, echolalia where he just sort of repeats things over and over mm-hmm. again. And the theory is, like, he was just on a bunch of uppers. And I realized, like, I did the same thing when I was prescribed Adderall.
Mm.
So, good job.
Yeah. Yep, we got him.
That sounds great, man.
Yeah, I've never taken any of them. They're just in a drawer.
Yeah, they're kind of... I don't know what they're there for. I mean, like, because I definitely... I've taken Adderall before, but not, like, how any person in college has taken it. Not because I need Adderall, but because...
I've had a bad experience with... So, when I was younger, I was prescribed Adderall. And I took Adderall from when I was, like, 8 until, like, my senior year of college.
Same!
And in college... My bottle of pills that I, like, took to be able to get up in the morning and go to class kept getting stolen.
Yeah, that's what happened to me.
It sucks.
Someone went into my dorm room and, like, trashed my room and then poured Pepsi, Diet Pepsi, on my laptop. Like, because mm-hmm. I would get, like, a box that was, like, 380 tablets and capsules of Adderall.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot. I don't take it anymore because it was just like, it fucks with your appetite and it suppresses like everything. Now
yeah,
I'm...
it fucks with your appetite. It deletes your personality.
Yeah.
Like anyone who knew me in college and people who know me now, I'm like a different person.
Yeah, exactly. I've definitely think my art has gotten better also over these past 5 months because I've also been like... in AA, and so, like, they also make you stop smoking marijuana. And so, basically, I'm just, like, living this completely substance-free life where, like, I cannot suppress anything. Like, every mm-hmm. thought that I have. And you can't date either.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is, I found to be really helpful because the whole point is to, like, seek validation just from yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, myself included, would seek it through, like, sex or dating, mm-hmm. along with alcohol to suppress any negative thoughts and marijuana or any other drugs. And I really don't miss it. Like, I think about dating and, like, how would I get back into it? And it just freaks... It doesn't freak me out, but it's just, like, something I really do not crave right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so you said that kind of having no... buffer, having no, like, nothing kind of preventing you from, you know, it's like brain to mouth and brain to pen. Like,
yeah.
Has your art changed a lot?
Yeah. So I make whatever just, like, comes to my mind. Like, I'll make the multi-panel comics, too, when it's just, like, at that right moment. And it feels nice. Nothing's forced. You have to learn to just sort of, like, accept your own process.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point is, like, I'm taking care of myself first. I am my priority now. And I know that, like, forcing anything will make me, like, will really, like, suppress any art they just like the quality of anything I have. And the stuff that I find that gets the most positive reaction is something that's just like at that moment, whereas stuff where I put so much thought into it, it might not as land as much because it's just, it can end up being forced. And I'm still trying to learn the balance of like improving and editing and then forcing things. Mm-hmm. But I'm really liking this new process that I have. And then with commissions, it's just sort of like, can you paint my dog? And mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, $40. And it's made me so much.
You probably charge more for painting someone's dog.
I don't. I know my audience. We're all like artists in Chicago. Yeah. We don't have a lot of money.
See, in my mind, I was thinking that you were painting like Roscoe Village mom's dogs. And I was like, you should charge like $200 for that.
Oh, yeah. I've gotten some. A friend of mine who's a military wife in Korea. She gave me more than $40 because they have more. But like when it comes to artists and like my friends, I usually just say, what is your budget? We will work with that.
Mm-hmm. See, okay. So that is hugely important. Like being able to like being, I guess, savvy enough and like empathic enough to realize like, yes, like while I could charge more, like certainly it's not in anyone's best interests.
Well, I find that really interesting. I've had this, I do videography work sometimes for folks, and I have that similar thing where, like, I know that some people will set up, like, an actual sliding scale, mm-hmm. but what is always makes more sense to me is that level of, like, what is your actual budget? Because, like, is that a conscious decision, or is, like, have you, like, are you against the idea of setting up like, okay, if you make this income bracket, it's this, if you make this income bracket, it's that, or do you prefer having that kind of conversational, like very flexible approach to that?
I just really, and I know that's sort of like the, you know, it's sort of ingrained in women to like not be demanding. Mm-hmm. I think it's part of that hating the confrontation when it comes to mm-hmm. friends or saying like, well, this is how much I charge. But, and so I think it's also a way to avoid that mm-hmm. because I don't know what these people can and cannot afford.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're willing to like pay more money and sometimes they can and it's fine. It doesn't take super long to make it. I get to listen to like Fiddler on the Roof soundtrack like 17 times in a row. Because I love Fiddler on the Roof a lot. East Coast Jewish, so.
Yeah. A friend of mine is currently in a off-Broadway production of Fiddler on the Roof that's entirely in Yiddish.
You should look up online. There is a 1981 production in Tokyo, and it's all in Japanese, and it's divine.
Ooh, that sounds cool.
It's really good. Because you're just like, how does it translate well with it? Because it's a musical, like, the mm-hmm. cadence, like, how did they do it? And it would be the same with any different language, but, yeah, it's really good. It's really good.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. But, yeah, going back, I just don't want to charge a lot because I hate that awkward conversation. And I get my commissions a lot from word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And if I'm willing to work around someone's budget, they're more likely to recommend me to other mm-hmm. people. And they're going to be more satisfied. And I am more empathetic. And I come off as more empathetic. And I'm not, you know, a famous artist. And I'm not... Doing commissions is not about the fame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about it's business. Mm-hmm. And I want an ethical approach to this business.
Yeah. How that's an interesting piece, and it really ties well into what I was going to ask you about next, which is, as an artist, like, how do you think about the balance of all of these things? Like, do you find that you balance, like, how you what messages you specifically want to communicate, or what kind of art you specifically want to make, and your commission work? Like, do you feel like, or when you're pitching, like, do you feel that you're finding a balance between all these things? Do you find that one takes precedence over the other?
Because commissions, definitely, because that just brings in money, and I'm moving apartments in June, and so for the time being, like, that's a lot. And then the New Yorker one, that needs to take precedence. I think I'm gonna tomorrow have to paint my mom's birthday present. She wants me to paint our two cats.
That's so fun.
I know, I'm really excited about that one. But then do New Yorker one. And then I also, when I perform comedy, I make sculptures that I incorporate into my comedy act, and I have one tonight, and it's actually like a fucking pain in the ass with this current bit I'm doing, but I think it's fun to perform. I have fun performing it. People seem to like it. So I'm going to continue doing it, even though I have to haul this giant prop around in a big broken suitcase. I have taken this suitcase for props around so often that it has basically, concrete has sanded down the wheels till it's just like flat, and so the wheels just don't work.
So is comedy what brought you to Chicago?
Yes.
How long have you been here?
I've been here for about 2 years now.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And I know that there are I know that there are a lot of avenues, like, once you arrive in Chicago and you're like, I'm here for comedy, I know that there are a lot of avenues that you can take.
Yeah.
How did you get started?
So I started just, this is going to sound great. I knew there was something other than IO and Second City that would really be more fulfilling, but I didn't know how, like, to find it. So what I did was use Tinder. Matched with someone who was, like, more involved in the comedy scene, and he took me to these different shows on our dates. No, this is
awesome.
It was really, I was really proud. And I told my mom, she was like, Madeline, that's really smart.
It's actually really good, yeah. I gotta say.
Tinder is also great for networking.
Well, now, so was this the guy that was at the Chris Red show?
No, this guy was completely different. This guy, actually, so my ex, a different ex, we'll call him JD, he was sweet mates in freshman year of college with the guy I matched with on Tinder. Like, a year after JD and his girlfriend broke up, Tinder guy and the ex-girlfriend hooked up, and then I hooked up with this guy, and we are all from Virginia. And then my ex, so when, like, I was still
you
living,
like swapped.
Yeah. And then when my ex is a piece of shit, so I don't care. And my ex used to live in Mexico, and he was showing me, like, this friend that from high school in Mexico that he still talked to, and he's like, "Look, isn't he? He's an attractive guy." I'm like, "He is an attractive guy." Found that guy here, fucked him too.
I gotta tell you, you have to meet the swipe right. Because, like, I'm just thinking immediately, the thing I wanted to say at that time, too, was, like, because that's so fucking smart, the
using Tinder to, like, find it?
To understand a professional scene. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I remember thinking at the time, I don't remember what part of it we were talking about, but the Swipe Right's, like, a television show. We just had them on the podcast 4 episodes ago. But the whole premise is that they're being hired to make people's dating profiles. The show is.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember we were talking about just, like, how, like, weirdly useful that being able to just, like, filter through people thing is.
Yeah.
And just, like, how, like, because the thing I remember thinking was, like, I don't understand why that doesn't exist for, and I feel like there have been things that have tried to do it where it just doesn't exist for, like, professional contacts.
Yeah, well, that's what there is. So, like, I still have a Tinder even though I'm not dating. And as a joke, I posted, like, some of my art prints, and I'd be like, super, like, if you want to buy an art print.
Did it work?
I've made like $40.
That's hell awesome. Yeah.
The whole, it's more of a bit than actual business.
No, right. But like that's...
Tinder is just like, for me, it's the biggest source of like humor and bits and like all of that.
And good advertising?
Yeah.
That's so fun. That's so cool. That's clever as fuck.
Yeah. I think...
Block this episode. I don't want anyone to take my fucking idea.
Yeah, now we're definitely not.
Yeah, we have to, like, post this episode unlisted or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Fuck yeah.
What was I going to say?
Oh, but I got back into the comedy scene. Like, that's how I started. And I knew I wanted to do more, like, weird old stuff because I didn't want to do improv. I did improv in Tucson, and I really, it wasn't for me. But I still took improv classes in Chicago, mm-hmm. which it wasn't for me, but that's also was, like, the height of my alcoholism. And you're, like, in this dark room with no carpets, brick walls, no windows, stuffed with 25 people you yeah. don't know, and then you're mm-hmm. told to be very happy. It yeah. wasn't for me, and I was yeah. very drunk.
It's wild things like that. So I quit drinking 4 years ago, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, you don't realize how much alcohol helps.
Yeah.
There's so many social situations where you're like, I can't, this isn't fun. Why would I do this?
Exactly.
And I don't know. It's definitely one of those things that it changes the way that you view a lot of life.
Right. And when you're sober, you're forced to actually confront everything. You don't have anything to dull any mm-hmm. feelings. And so I think that actually has made my art better.
Mm.
Because, one, I'm not passing out on my couch. So I actually am able to make stuff. But... Mm-hmm. I'm, like, discovering a lot about myself and, like, what I genuinely enjoy. And I do like being involved with comedy in Chicago. I just hate writing.
Mm-hmm.
I hate writing so much. I was briefly a writer for IO Comedy Network. I wrote one sketch. And then I just quit. And when it was, what was it? The pitch season or, like... for like interning at like the Late Show or something, like mm-hmm. the packet season time, I just like could not get into it, and all my friends were like, you know, really doing that, and for some reason I just couldn't do it. And there would people always be listening like, Clickhole has some openings, like everyone's writing for the fellowship, or like Cards Against Humanity is hiring, you know, you have to submit this packet. And I just could not get into it mm-hmm. for the life of me. And so I'm trying to find a way right now where I can be involved with comedy and not have to write. And mm-hmm. so I think right now art is helping. So I'm doing the comics, make some money with commissions, and then performing with sculpture pieces I make, or like stuff I make for like a PowerPoint presentation where I don't have to, anything to avoid writing basically is my pitch.
Mm.
Nice. Is there space in the Chicago comedy scene for comedy that is not... Because I guess that's something that hadn't occurred to me, that a lot of Chicago comedy is based on writing.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But is there room for comedy here?
There's an alt scene, but... Yeah, now we definitely have to block this episode. I was involved with an alt comedy show. I was a co-producer. I'm not going to name the show, but... It was not a good experience for me. I had a bad show, and then, like, that just tainted everything. And it's... The alt comedy scene's definitely, like, very, like, cliquish. But that's gonna happen no matter where you are.
That happens in so, like, you know...
And yeah. with the alt comedy scene, there's, like, no exception to that. And I just felt very uncomfortable. A lot of them were very nice people, and it has nothing to do with, like... everyone being a jerk. It's just like when it's a very cliquish thing, I become self-sabotaging where I decide I don't fit in and I'm gonna retreat and then hate these people. Like, I like these people are like the hell trap nightmare people are like perfectly nice to me. They've always been nice to me, but because I decided for so long based off, you know, not fitting in, not being one of the cool kids and stuff, it's always going to be like that, or they're going to discover something about me, and so I just grow quiet. And so with the old comedy scene, I just, like, have a hard time reintegrating into that, and I have in my mind that, like, oh, I'm a pariah there.
Mm.
So instead, what I'm doing yeah. is just doing performing around people that I can just sort of be myself, with whom I can be myself, be weird, gory, dark Madeline, and they're okay with that, and not trying to find a specific scene. But there is, if you have something and it's funny, there's a place in Chicago for it.
Yeah.
And that's what I like. Done. Break.
Period.
All right, bye, guys. That Simpsons gag where it's like open, close door, and drives off.
Yeah, we'll do that all in post. Yeah.
Thank you.
One of the things I think is really interesting is the idea of, because anytime we get into kind of talking about multidisciplinary, the idea of how these things inform each other is very fascinating to me, because I think that in a lot of cases there's a myth that when you study one art form that you shouldn't spread yourself too thin on format, but I've been time and time again been proven how that's wrong, and I'm curious for you, like, how is it that these, because you do have so many disciplinaries that you work with, like, how is it that they inform each other, and how do you think your work would be different if you had just been focusing on one of them?
Well, I think what really helps is I'm only doing the things that genuinely excite me. Mm-hmm. And I'm only taking inspiration from things. Oh my God, I'm supposed to.
That's all right.
I'm supposed to call my sponsor. Who cares? That's the thing, is like, I'm just working on the things that I genuinely want to do. And I take inspiration from the things that I like. And I like art and I like comedy. But honestly, like, I don't force myself to take inspiration from a comedian. I don't seek out watching comedy acts. And I don't seek out, like, learning about new artists or reading art magazines. Mm-hmm. I just stay interested in the things I like. And I don't spread myself too thin, because I'm not forcing anything. And if I had just done art, which I've tried to do, I would be really, really, like, miserable, because I want my comedy to be my art to be my comedy. And I think there's a way to make comedy art that doesn't have words. And I do like doing the comics, but that's like one sentence I have to write down.
Yeah.
Who cares? But I think there's a way to put visual humor into everything. And so that's one thing I've always liked, is a lot of visual humor. And one of my best friends, who works at a bank in Sterling, Virginia, or live in Herndon, Virginia, and lives with his boyfriend and their cat, he's like my biggest comedy inspiration of all time because of the way he sees things. Mm. The sense of humor has really driven, like, what I find to be funny, too. And I feel no shame in taking inspiration from him over a famous, like, New York comic or something. I'm not digging at them. I'm just saying, like, that's where I get mine.
I think that's I think that that's a healthy perspective to have. Mm-hmm. Because I think that when you model after people who are enjoying fame right now, it kind of inclines you toward, I don't want to say like an unrealistic view of what a life in comedy can be, but it prescribes like a path, the only path for happiness.
Right.
Whereas, like, if you model your comedic voice after just people in your life who you find funny, what it does is it gives you space to find your own way.
Yeah.
And whether that means, you know, doing a tight five on some late night show or further wearing down the wheels of your cart, you know, yeah. I admire that perspective. I think it's cool.
I would not have had that without sobriety, because I think the way I was, the reason I was drinking a lot is because I thought I needed that path. And 7-8 months ago, it would have been completely different. I thought, like, when you're doing stuff, you have to work towards fame because that's, like, what worked for a lot of people. And I was so miserable and just, like, all the time. And I, for the love of me, for the life of me, I could not imagine someone saying, maybe, you know, fame's not important, and not getting mad or taking it personally. And now, genuinely, I don't care. That's not my drive, because right now I'm just focusing on making myself happy. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I'm really proud of the work I make, whether or not it gets anywhere or not. I'm just really proud of it.
I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
Seriously, like, yeah, I wish that, because it's hard, you know, because I think that when people enter into the performing arts, like Daniel and I are, we say this in every episode, but our background is in opera.
Oh, and I love opera. I was just listening to Prince Igor today.
Oh, nice.
Nice. That's a deep cut.
I saw the 2013 production at the Met.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
It was so good.
Nice. So, but
not to brag, but oh, no, to brag.
Yeah.
No, that's
the right audience for it.
Yeah,
that's for
no,
sure.
we're properly impressed. But thank you. But when you're in that setting and you're going through what you need to go through in order to, you know, reach a certain level, you're told that the only way that you can really, like, tip your cap as an opera singer is by doing the young artist track and getting an agent and, you know, paying your dues and then singing in regional houses. And then maybe eventually you'll go to the Met, or the other track is to go get famous in Europe, which, like, how can you look a 20-year-old in the eye and say, yeah, the only way that you're worth yourself as an opera singer is by getting famous in Europe. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think that kind of mentality is very common across people who enter into the performing arts, where it's like, see that there, you know, that face that you've been seeing on TV and listening to in your headphones mm-hmm. since you were in middle school, like, that's the only mark of success.
Yeah, but then you hear about them being like, you know, they'll be like, I sacrificed a lot, a family, right. close friends, mm-hmm. a normal life. And they'd be like, I would probably trade it. Like, Lady Gaga took time off because she hated fame so much. Mm-hmm. It's like a ups and downs. And it's like, just choose the one that feels fulfilling. And you're there. You might sometimes wonder, like, what would happen. But people are always going to, like, wonder, like, if I did something differently. The point is just, like, being happy.
Yeah.
With where you are. And I'm so much happier now that fame is not a goal. I mean, ideally, what I would love to be a New Yorker cartoonist and or illustrator, and then still work, like, an office job, because you can't live just off that.
Right.
And that would just be, yeah, that would be ideal, like, the highest level of fame I would want. And nothing else. And it's not like I'm saying I want the fame, but it's more like that's the gig I want. It's a career path I want and I'm working towards. And I know it's going to take a while. Also, what helps people is not focusing on age.
Mm. Yeah.
That's only going to hold you back. That's going to make you so much sadder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially because so many benchmarks have been so pushed back for our generation.
God, yeah.
Like, I turned 29 in a couple of days, mm-hmm. and when my mom was my age, she had my brother and was pregnant with me.
Yeah, my mom was a doctor.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm nowhere near, she'd been married for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, but there's no way that at 25, I was in any place to do that right. financially, you know, career-wise, in terms of where my head was at, goals, desire, like, and so, like, placing any kind of similar benchmark on yourself in terms of age, like,
yeah,
yeah, it's meaningless.
It mm-hmm. does not accomplish anything. Do things at your own pace, people. Do things that make you happy. And don't worry about age. Also, I like the people who kind of, like, create things later in life, because behind that is a rich life full of experiences and struggles. Yeah. Like, I straight, and I'm not just saying that to be, like, trying to be inspirational or uplifting. I genuinely prefer that because they also make me feel human. Mm-hmm. In the end, it's also, like, how do I feel about myself with these people? And I feel good around, like, I don't know, J.K. Rowling. Well, not her Twitter, but, like...
I was literally just thinking, I was going to be like, yeah, like, J.K. Rowling, ah, she's kind of a dumpster fire. But her, like, yeah, her career path
I mean, her minus Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. She
yeah.
She didn't get famous from fucking Twitter.
Right.
Right.
She wrote from writing some good book in Scotland or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we have a few minutes left before we have minutes left. So we should...
I don't like when you do this.
What? Really?
Yeah. Anyway, but I guess, like, what are your hopes for the future? Like, I know it's, like, that you were saying, like, you know, getting that gig with the New Yorker and, like, but I don't know, like, where do you hope to see yourself there in, like, 5 years or...
I mean, 5 years would be nice. It doesn't have to be. I just want to be happy and, like, financially stable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I finally am good through sobriety. You become so much better at finances. It's insane. I have money in my bank account now. But in 5 years, I don't know. I want to not be ashamed, at least where I am. I mean, I'm living life. I'm like... That's just about making me happy, and I'm on this cool podcast. So, like, what route is working, bitch? Looks like mine.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Do you have anything coming up? Are you doing any shows?
I have one tonight called Just a Bit at the Crowd Theater at, like, 8. And then something at... The Crowd this Sunday at 8.
Cool.
I don't know. It's all over the place. I'll just be like, whatever. But the show that I really like that people should definitely go see, it's called the Bristleburg Town Hall. And if you just look up Bristleburg, it's an immersive town hall show of, like, this really weird town. And it's always held at the Comfort Station in Logan Square. That's the show I really like to plug, because it's, like, a really, really fun environment that's super welcoming.
Nice.
Well, we do have a few minutes left now. The last thing we do with all of our guests is a one-minute plug for anything that's upcoming. Sometimes it's very obvious, like, letting people know where they can find more about your work and see it and support it.
And, like, how people can get in contact with you for commissions and stuff like that.
If that were a thing. Otherwise, we love hearing other shout-outs to folks that are doing dope work, any music, movies, TV shows that your person... Or any music, what am I saying? Any media that you're personally consuming, music, movies, TV shows, things like that.
I really only look at cats on Instagram.
Like, that's great, though.
Only. My friend Maggie Gates, she's having an article soon, I believe in the Chicago Reader, about this thing called Slime Fest. That's really fun. She's a good writer. Well, you can reach me. I'm sorry that it's hard to realize or hard to remember what I'm consuming. But you can reach me on my Instagram. That's unofficial_Madeline_Horwath. Or you can find me on Facebook at Madeline Claire Horwath and just message me for a commission. And I can show you some examples and we can talk what you're thinking of. And you tell me your budget and we work around it.
And if you're lucky, there may be a free credit report Easter egg.
Yeah. Very lucky. You should be so lucky. That's a good website.
Mm-hmm. Helps so many people get apartments.
Yeah.
Hit us up, free credit report.
Yeah.
For that sponsor.
They would do that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
This has been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, this has been great.
Yeah, we have to release this episode.
We're going to. Okay. I kept saying that we're not going to, but we have to.
It was delightful. Really, it was really fun. Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Dan Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, there are so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to scottbmag.com. That's our website. We post all of our articles and podcast episodes there. You can also find us on social media. On Facebook, we have a Facebook page called Scott B Magazine. We also have a Facebook group that we love and adore called Sounding Board. We post, we talk about local arts, local politics, and astrology memes in that Facebook group. It's a really fun time. You should check it out. Otherwise, we're on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr under Scott B. Mag, spelled the same way as the website, Scapimag. And if you want to listen more to the podcast, the one that you're listening to right now, you can find that in most podcast places, including Google Play, iTunes Podcasts, and Radio Public under Scoppy Radio.
And I'm here, as always, to talk about the importance of subscribing. If you head to our website, scoppymag.com, and go to our subscribe page, there are a couple ways to do that. The first is to sign up for email blasts. This is huge because even though we post across social media platforms, Facebook buries our content. So if you want to see 100% of what we're doing and not just 30% of it, you should sign up for those email blasts. The second thing you can do is become a member. For as little as $2 a month, you can help us support our, you can help us, quite frankly, keep our lights on. We're in the middle of a fundraising effort called the Sustain Campaign, which is our attempt to not have a paywall. So if you're in a position to give just $2 a month, it really would make a huge difference. Also, we have merch for sale. If you head to scoppymag.com/store, you can get your new favorite t-shirt, and that is a promise. Also, if you are a business or an entity or just have something fun to say and want to advertise with us, please feel free to reach out to us at scoppymag@gmail.com. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.